Coming up today, Tesla announces distracting shiny things, and we look at Firefox's cunning plan to take on Google Chrome. Listening to episode 344 of the Wired UK podcast, your weekly guide to the best of science, tech, ideas, business and design. I'm your host, James Templeton, and joining me are Matthew Burgess.
Hey.
And Jeremy White.
Hello.
Hey. Have you been watching too many YouTube videos?
Hey guys. He's made me laugh right from the very beginning.
There you go. It's going to be a long half hour. Matt, what did you learn this week?
I learned this week the most amount of pull-ups ever done in a minute.
Okay.
It was by Jeremy White. And no, it wasn't. Not to insult your arms too much, Jeremy, but it was 54, so almost 1 a second.
Wow. Yeah. That's pretty good going. I'll go next while Jeremy regains his composure. Right. I learned that 596 million people use social media in China out of a population of about a billion. That's despite Facebook and Twitter both being banned in the country. So nearly all of those people, nearly 600 million people, are not on Facebook or Twitter. They're on the Chinese alternatives, things like Weibo, which we know quite a lot about. But still, a bit weird to think that, you know, Facebook has these grand plans to grow, but there's always probably going to be a billion people that it can't get at. And, yeah, that's going to annoy Mark Zuckerberg. Jeremy, what did you learn this
week?
My fact is not
what I've learned. It's that you asked me for a fact,
and I didn't
prepare. I don't have one, but I'm going to let the listeners in on a fact.
Go on.
And that fact is that James Templeton is hungover today.
No, I'm not hungover.
Because you've been out all night. And so, just before we came on the podcast, he said, let's keep this one short, guys. And we all know why.
This
James.
Is what lies between me and the weekend, basically. I'm not hungover, Jeremy. I'm very sleepy. Very sleepy. 3 hours of sleep does not make for a happy Templeton. Okay, our first story this week is Tesla, and not Tesla cars, but Tesla trucks.
That's right, Tesla trucks. So 2 months later than they said they were going to announce it, so surprise, surprise, Tesla are late in bringing something to market, even their announcements. They have revealed their electric truck called the Tesla Semi.
Chortle.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, there's a name just bound to be taking the piss out of.
Yeah, well, maybe it probably doesn't do the same thing in America. I don't know.
Moving swiftly on from that, there was a couple of surprises of the evening. Not only was it, they didn't just announce that, they also announced a new Tesla Roadster, like a hypercar, but also the truck itself can go considerably further than was predicted by analysts. So it's got a range of 500 miles per charge. It can carry over 36 tons, and it's got a top speed of 65 miles an hour. Now, it should be noted that this is not one of those long haul trucks where where you go across the country. This is for reasonably short haul. You know, 200, 300 miles of range is what Reuters reported as being, you know, what the Tesla truck would have had. But the Bureau of Transportation and Statistics says that most freight shipments by value tonnage move less than 250 miles. Mm. So it should be reasonably effective at what it actually does.
Yeah.
The big questions are, of course, as with everything with Tesla, is that are they actually going to be able to produce it at scale and at quality?
Yeah.
There is no doubt at all that Tesla can produce an electric truck. I mean, the wheels will have, I think the wheels have on this will be Tesla Model 3 wheels on each, the Tesla Model 3 motors on each wheel.
Yeah.
So they're reutilizing some of their existing technology anyway. They can make the truck, no problem at all. Tesla have battery technology and expertise coming out their ears. It's the production issues that they've had with every model they've produced. The Model S had problems. Quality problems as well. The Model X did too, with the doors. And the Model 3 is massively behind production schedules. So right now, I think in the third quarter of this year, Tesla were meant to be producing 1,500 Model 3s per month.
Mm.
They managed 260.
Yes.
So by the end of the year, they were predicting 20,000 per month. There's no way they're going to hit that at all.
The promise of the technology and what they can deliver in small numbers is very impressive. So this is a truck that you can charge the equivalent of 400 miles in 30 minutes. So the idea is you drop off your delivery and you're off again. and you don't have to sit around waiting for it. So in terms of range and charging and technology, they're up there and above, probably the best of them. But
absolutely,
they have this problem at the moment that they're still able to get all of this hype,
yeah,
but they're not delivering the product in the quantity that the hype now justifies.
No, not at all.
Before you go into a tirade around that, can I ask another question about the range?
Sure.
And it's more on electric vehicles generally, because every sort of electric vehicle is like, oh, we can do 300 miles, 500 miles as a range.
Yeah.
Presumably, people are never going to drive that in them.
Maximum range. Yeah. The new benchmark for cars is 500 kilometers. You know, that's what the iPace coming out will be. And you know,
that's not one journey. It's just like multiple journeys.
Yeah. Well, no. You'll never get that from. Yeah. I mean, the way to get that would be to one journey, driving incredibly carefully with everything turned off. You know, you won't get that with multiple trips. But, you know, having a maximum range, what you want is the highest maximum range you could possibly get. So it's one of those things that we'll have to see in reality when they actually do bring it out, which brings me back to the quality and the production issues.
Yeah.
Because, I think it was Consumer Reports in the States. They are a very well respected, consumer body looking at whether things are actually made to standard or products, you know, technology are actually made to standard. And they said something like the Consumer Reports, they said that Tesla's reliability, this is back in 2015, Tesla's reliability doesn't match its high performance. Now, that's a damning, you know, indictment of the production quality of the vehicles. You know, they rattle. Or they have done, you know, customers have reported rattling noises, you know, poor quality where trim is falling off in the car. In the very first model Tesla, they forgot to make the floor mats supposedly. And, you know, it's that experience of producing mass volume of vehicles, which Tesla doesn't have. They've got battery smarts, but they're competing with companies like BMW, who have been making vehicles on the production line for over 100 years.
Yeah, but this truck has some different things about it, we should say. So it's big enough, the cabin is big enough to be able to stand in as an adult human being.
The seats in the middle is very much like, you know, the McLaren F1 type of hypercar, and you've got these two touch screens either side. It's connected up to the Wazoo.
Yeah.
You know, it's got all sorts of things going on in it as well. But
semi autonomous, sort of convoy autonomous.
That's the thing, you know, lane assist, so lane steering, that sort of thing. But it's not autonomous vehicle, and a lot of people were wondering whether it was going to be or not. Of course,
yeah. But it doesn't need to be really.
No, it doesn't need to be. And certainly if they're getting into this area, they don't want to suddenly move in and put loads of people in the trucking industry, you know, out of work in one fell swoop.
Yeah.
They want to establish a foothold before they actually then make them all fully autonomous and then put everyone out of their jobs.
And I assume with like the previous models of Tesla, Elon Musk has said that actually through software updates, they will be able to make them pretty much fully autonomous.
Exactly,
so
it's
probably can be capable in the future, but needs a good amount of software updates and things to be fully autonomous.
Absolutely, yeah. But what's odd about this is that we have been expecting this for a long time. But it was the other announcement. It was the Roadster that they'd managed to keep completely under wraps, and that's clever for a company to do these days. You know, that's brilliant. Now that vehicle is just absolutely crazy. I mean, that's. Let me just bring up my notes here. Sorry, it's got 0-60 in under 2 seconds.
For an
electric vehicle. It's faster than a Bugatti Chiron, which is one of the fastest cars in the world right now.
0-100 in 4.2 seconds.
4.2 seconds at 0-100. That is just crazy fast. And of course, when you're having a car that can go that fast, you want it to be built to a certainly good standard. So this is something that they will have to address with that. But also, the other argument there, of course, is that what the hell are they doing making more products?
Make the Model 3, Elon.
Exactly. Or rather than concentrate on what they're actually doing, apart from firing all the production staff that seem to be getting it wrong so far, Elon's now saying, no, we're going to bring out a truck and we're going to bring out now a hypercar as well.
Yeah.
And you're like, hang on, you know, this is almost a distraction from the fact, no, look over here, look at the lovely new things. Don't look at what's going terribly wrong over there. Look at the new stuff. So, more vehicles, more problems.
Yeah, for the car nuts that maybe tuned out 5 minutes ago, this is it's actually quite an intriguing story, because every time any technology website or website in general publishes a story about something Elon Musk has done, be it space rockets or plans for Mars colonization or the more prosaic stuff like trucks and cars, there is a huge amount of interest in him and the work of his companies, particularly Tesla and SpaceX, and Hyperloop, and I could go on and on. He's done quite a bit with his life, and it remains to be seen how long people will remain enamored with Elon Musk, if the Model 3 problems persist, if this truck ends up being delayed, if there are further complaints from people spending $200,000 on something like the Roadster and then going, oh, it's kind of cheap, it rattles, it's got these problems, yada yada.
That is the thing. It's like, well, what will they do? I mean, it's a strange way, like, it is a case of like, get your house in order, sort it all out. But then also, Tesla have managed to position themselves, as you say, as the brand that is linked with the future. So because it has to be said that they're not the first to produce an electric truck. Daimler have already got an electric truck. There are other companies bringing out electric trucks, not with that range, admittedly, and some are hybrid, but some are electrified.
Yeah, and there's hydrogen fuel trucks as
Hydrogen fuel trucks as well. So they're not the only players in the game. They're just the most high profile.
So it's all going to be in a couple of years, Tesla's plans, I think, for 2019. And there's an awful lot of competitors that are gearing up for around that time frame or the early 2020s.
That's right. And of course, it won't be delayed. No, it'll be 2019, of course.
Well, we'll see.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll see. I'd put money on it.
We'll have Jeremy
put
on
your
to
money.
Don't put
my money on it. No.
Well, we'll have Jeremy back on the podcast to complain that Tesla still hasn't bought out anything in a few months' time when they miss another deadline, which they probably will.
I've no doubt seven other things will be announced by Tesla from now to then, just whether they actually can end up
shiny distractions, Jeremy. Our second story is about something that probably everyone listening to this podcast uses. You might be using one right now while you're sort of half listening to us. It's a web browser, and well, hands up. Who uses Google Chrome?
Yes.
Yes.
Who uses Safari?
Yes.
Sometimes. Who uses Internet Explorer or Edge? Nobody.
No.
Who uses Firefox?
No.
Who used to use Firefox?
Briefly.
A lot. Yes.
Me, for years. Now, this was a story that broke this week. Firefox is releasing a new browser. Matt, tell us a bit more about it.
Yeah, let's make the easy segue from cars costing thousands of pounds and have billion-dollar development budgets to the sexy world of internet browsers.
Yeah, non-profit developed internet
browsers. I think I pulled
the
short straw this week.
You did. You can do it. Come on.
So
blow my socks off.
As we've just mentioned, in the sort of mid-2000s, around then roughly, Firefox was pretty much the browser of choice for a lot of people. It was one of the most dominant browsers in the market. It was obviously only on desktop at that time. There wasn't really such a thing as developed mobile browsers.
Yeah.
You just had sort of the really terrible version that was on your phone and had 3G or whatever.
Not even that. Yeah.
And then Google Chrome came around in about 2008, and since then pretty much everybody has started using Google Chrome. It's got the most of the market share, so to compare it to Firefox, it's got 13% of the desktop market share, and even fewer than that on mobile, and Chrome has 64% of the desktop market share, which is pretty comprehensive. Like, this is the winning thing. So this week Firefox, or more precisely the company behind it, the non-profit organization behind it, not a company technically, Mozilla, announced Firefox Quantum, which it claims is twice as fast as Firefox was 6 months ago and uses 30% less memory than Chrome.
And this has been borne out in tests by people who have done some sort of run some early numbers on it. It's very fast, it's very sleek, it's very slick, it's very un-Firefox. So Firefox was the first browser to introduce tab web browsing, which was a huge deal.
Yep.
It was the first browser, I think, to introduce add-ons in any meaningful way. Again,
extensions,
that was extensions, which was a huge deal. And these are all ideas that have been taken by Google Chrome and made better, made sleeker.
Yeah. That's why I choose
nicer.
My browser. That's on the extensions available, really. That's the main factor for me.
And what Google did in 2008 was it made the incredibly smart gamble that the web browser was going to be the future interface, at least for the interim period, of how we interact with pretty much everything in technology. So it has its Chromebook laptops, which are pretty much just a web browser in a very basic laptop. But it's brilliant in that it ties together all of those Google services, and it means that you're contributing all of your data into those services, which makes Google more money, which makes Google smarter, etc. But it sort of left Firefox and Mozilla standing in its dust. Mm-hmm. And this is Firefox's attempt to catch up. And it's impressed people technically, but it remains to be seen if it can kind of win the battle of hearts and minds.
Yeah, so Firefox has made quite a big deal out of this launch, and there's been a lot of interest in it, actually. A colleague, Matt Reynolds, wrote the story about this on Wired's website. You can go look at that. And he sort of interviewed a few of the main people from Firefox. And they quite freely admitted that actually Firefox fell behind for a number of years, and they say that this is their sort of this is their time to revamp it and make it better. And there was, like, they say there was about 700 people involved in the coding of this browser from like 80 different countries around the world, which is all a bit spin in their eyes, obviously. But yeah, they want to point out that they've made a big deal of this, and they say that actually why they think that they can be better now is that they say that browsers have largely stopped innovating and there isn't much that's changing in them. I haven't actually seen what they've particularly done to change this. They've obviously sped this up, made it faster, and that is innovation in a way, but it doesn't seem like they're adding too much like brand new to this.
No,
they're
There's only so many ways that you can skin a cat or reinvent the wheel. I mean, a web browser is these days a very functional, useful thing, and it's all about how you make it as easy to use as possible and bring forward all of the useful features that it can do without having to go through sub menus to find these useful hidden bits and bobs.
Is there anything from your web browsers that you, either of you two, aren't getting, or you think that this could be a really useful sort of addition or
change?
These
are the things where, you know, no one would have said, "Oh, if you could only give me, you know, a tab system, that would have been brilliant." So, like, what they need to do is keep coming up with innovations like that. Do we have, you know, are there any things like that in this new, you know, in this new web browser?
And it's a bit like the complaints that you had about people's perceptions of the iPhone XS. You know, when Apple launched the original iPhone, it changed everything. Yeah. When Firefox introduced tab browsing and add-ons, I mean, not in the same way, but it did have a very profound effect on how people use the internet and how people use their web browsers.
Yeah.
And now it's more about refinements. I think Chrome's on something stupid like version 78 or whatever. You know, there's constant iterations to speed it up, to fine-tune it. But the problem that Mozilla is going to have is that it's let Google get such a leap on it. Mm-hmm. And people are now so used to the convenience of when you search for something on desktop that search is matched on mobile and you can flip between the two very easily. It's got all of the Google accounts that people are, well, not addicted to, but sort of wedded to, baked into it. And I think now Firefox, after way too long, has dropped Yahoo search natively in favor of Google search in the new browser. So that's a big deal. But in a way, I mean, then they're just going, you know, they're losing a point of differentiation. So maybe they could have gone for something like DuckDuckGo, which is a more privacy-focused browser, search engine. Then you have alternatives like Opera, which are now sort of off on their own as the Google alternative. And it's difficult.
It does feel like it's too late, to be honest. They've got to try, and they've got to keep doing this because it's a good product. Sort of early tests of it, yeah, it looks very good. The company, or the organization, as I should say, is very ethical. It's very sort of privacy focused. It doesn't go the whole hog in the same sort of way that DuckDuckGo does. But it is a sort of very ethically good company to be sort of invested in and wanting to, and they make a big deal out of their sort of pushes around encryption and privacy and everything on this. But I don't think that's enough to sort of convince somebody that I should use it, or there's going to be very few people that decide their web browser based on the company.
Do we feel that sort of a growing awareness of the reach and power of these big technology monopolies is going to see people not turn against them, but reconsider? So Firefox is way more popular in Europe than it is in the United States. And we're seeing in Europe a far greater awareness now of the problems of networks like Facebook and Google, to move away from them and think, well, maybe if I spend a little bit more money on a service, or spend any money on a service, it will mean that I'm no longer the product, right? You're flipping that kind of false sell or whatever it would be. So if a privacy-focused browser developed by a nonprofit is suddenly, you're suddenly aware of it and you think, oh, it seems pretty nice. It's just, it's that tiny decision to change. It's like people don't switch energy suppliers.
No, you've got to make it, you can't just, it can't just be about, you know, an ethical decision or something like that. It's got to be an ethical decision and the product is better. Yeah. That's how you get people to change. The product is everything. The product, I'm biased, but the product has to be basically, you know, it has to be a better solution. It has to be a better product. It has to be simpler, faster, quicker, easy to use, a pleasure to use. Then you'll get people changing. And then they'll feel good about the change if it's a non-profit and all that sort of business. And I really hope it's not the case here. But so many times... we hear of companies saying, you know, oh, we realize we've let, you know, people, our competition get ahead of us, and we're going to get, you know, back on the horse and do that. It's normally the last announcement you hear from a company just before they really go, you know, completely over the edge. But I'm sure that's not going to happen in this case here. However, it's that sort of comment when it's got so bad that the executives at the top of the company or whatever it is have to acknowledge that they've really let the drop the ball and taken their eye off things, then that's when, you know, it's, as you say, maybe it's too little too late.
And the other point that we haven't mentioned is, if you're going to try and produce a better product than Google has got practically infinite resources and talent that it can hire and bring into this, so it's going to be a tough one. But
and then if you do, they'll copy it. You know, they'll you know, like with the tabs, exactly. Like with the extensions.
Yeah, exactly. You know? And I think Firefox was the first one to have sort of the search in the search bar.
So really, okay. Well, there you go. You know, these are great ideas. They need to keep coming up with these ideas.
Yeah, and it's still got 90 million users, which is a fair chunk of people, although it's small fry compared to Chrome. And I think even though you said it was almost like PR puff on behalf of the company, having 700 people contributing to the code and it being an effort by the community that's sort of invested in this idea of a web browser that's developed by a non-profit does give you some hope that it can move up and beyond that sort of niche, only really targeted at people that are looking for this kind of product, to something that, as Jeremy says, can compete as a product.
Yeah.
Because it was huge. It was absolutely huge. And incredibly quickly, it turned, because people don't have loyalty to these kind of things.
God, no.
They just want to have the best thing available to them. So we're seeing this with products like Snap and Snap, with companies like Snap and Snapchat, is... they had a huge valuation, but no one has any loyalty to it. So people switch from it incredibly quickly. And you kind of can't really see that happening with Chrome, but it could. But the fact is that web browser has become everyone's almost default operating system on desktop, on mobile, and they're going to be pushing it into things like Google Assistant. It's all based off, you know, this convenience of Google. And that's what you've got to compete against, which is pretty hard.
Yeah, I'm glad I'm not doing it.
Almost impossible.
Good luck, guys. Good luck. We will finish, as we are wont to do these days, with a quiz. Yes.
Oh, God.
Yes.
My track record at these is abysmal.
Well, you can...
So is mine, though. So there has to be a... Well, there doesn't have to be a winner.
He lost last week to Matt Reynolds 1-0.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Here we go. Okay, so this week we published the inaugural Animal Battle on wired.co.uk. Over the next 7 weeks, we'll be pitting some of nature's most remarkable creatures against one another in a series of virtual battles. Two animals per week, head-to-head in a ruthless knockout tournament. And you get to decide who wins. You can vote for your favourite on Twitter and Facebook and read all about two fascinating animals every Friday on wired.co.uk.
This is internet gold.
Exactly. Well, we hope it is. So this week we pitted the tenacious tardigrade against the hideous hagfish. But how much do my fellow podcasters know about this week's animal pretenders? Are you ready?
No.
Are you ready? Some of them are very hard. Some of them are number-based, so you've got a chance. Okay, question one. The tardigrade has a few alternative nicknames. Can you name one of them?
Oh, you've got to be kidding me. What the hell?
Matt Burgess has a chance because he's read the article.
I've read it, but I can't remember it. I can remember part of the answer, which isn't correct, is it?
What does it look like?
Space bear.
Okay, we've got space bear. Jeremy?
Mr. Stay Puft.
Space bear is correct. Yeah. So it's also known as a water bear or a moss piglet. So
these you couldn't remember moss piglet.
So these are tiny, tiny.
That could be Matt Burgess's nickname.
Moss piglet. Yeah. I'm not quite sure what to make of that. So these are tiny, tiny little creatures. They measure about a millimetre long, and they look a bit like a cross between a walrus and a piglet. And they tend to live in damp areas like moss, so hence moss piglet and water bears. Question two. Hagfish are the only known animals to have a skull, but no what?
Brain.
A skull, but no what? Okay.
And they must have a brain. That's a silly
Well, you've said it now. It's
that
too
was a
late.
Silly answer. There's only there's not many things you what are involved around a skull.
A skull, but no life insurance.
Come on, Jeremy.
Eye sockets.
Ah, well, I mean, it's a guess, isn't it? Spine. They don't have a spine. They're spineless. But they do have heart. But how many hearts does a hagfish have?
Seven.
I'm going to say three.
Oh, you're closest, Matt Burgess. We'll give you the point. It's four. One main heart and three extra ones that help blood to make it around their bodies. And this is a very ancient sort of physiology. So they haven't really evolved much in 300 million years, which means that they have to have these extra hearts to make sure that the blood can get back round.
Oh, I see. I thought you mean like the three hearts to make sure the blood goes round. The main one was just for writing poetry.
Yeah,
or
yeah,
something.
Just for the feels. 2-0 to Matt Burgess. You can still fill it back, Jeremy. I think it's unlikely.
No,
but you can try.
No,
yeah.
Okay. I may as well not be here for this bit.
Oh, come now.
Come on.
Question four. The tardigrade is the only known animal that can survive where?
In space. I knew that one.
Yeah, it's true.
Sorry.
Yeah, so it's all over. In the vacuum of space, in 2007...
I was going to say in your flat, actually.
Hey. In the vacuum of space. So in 2007, a posse of tardigrades spent 10 days in the vacuum of space on the outside of a space shuttle.
A posse of tardigrades?
Yeah, that's the collective noun. Yeah, posse of tardigrades.
See them riding in over the plains.
Pretty much. Yeah, they'd look good on a tiny horse. In a simulation run by scientists at the universities of Harvard and Oxford, which pelted Earth with killer asteroids, supernova, and gamma ray bursts, tardigrades outlived 10 billion years worth of cataclysms. What is expected to finally kill off the tardigrades?
Yeah, go on, you go first. Yeah.
What do you mean, apart from the sun's implosion?
It's that.
Me. Yeah.
So when the sun fails and swells to a red giant or whatever it's called and engulfs the Earth in flame, that will finally see off the tardigrades. But until then, they'll be fine.
Absolutely.
They're more or less indestructible.
My God.
There we go. But you know, it's okay. They're tiny little cute bears that you can't even see.
They're not cute. I've seen the picture. No, I've seen the picture. You know. They're scary as hell.
They're not as scary as the slimy hagfish. The slimy hagfish is quite the sight to behold. It really is. If anyone's been watching the BBC's new series of Blue Planet, not to give her any spoilers away, but you will come across a creature in the third episode on coral reefs called the Bobbit. Truly, this is the thing of nightmares. And the hagfish is definitely from the same wheelhouse as the Bobbit. So it was in part a visual story. So to find out a lot more about both of these animals, head to wild.co.uk to check out round one of Animal Battle.
Just be careful doing an internet search for Bobbit. I'll leave it there, but just be careful.
Okay, some good advice
from
Jeremy.
That's a news story from quite a while ago.
Okay. We will leave it there. Go and vote for your favourite animal. Tardigrade should win, just saying. And we'll see you again next week. Goodbye.
Bye.